What brought you to the decision to retire? How old were you when you retired?
I was 66. I'd been lucky. I'd never had a malpractice case. We went to these seminars. PLICO, that's the insurance arm of the State Medical Society. They would hold those for doctors to warn them about malpractice. One I went to, they said, look to your right and look to your left. One of you three are going to be sued this year. Anyway, I never got sued, so I thought maybe I better quit. We had an opportunity to sell the building, and sister started that group called Omni. Our pediatricians thought they would go with that. Really kind of dissolved our situation. By that time, we had Dr. Nelson's son, Franklin Nelson. He was a surgeon, and he tried to stick around for a little while, but I don't know, he wasn't able to make a go of it. He joined the Navy and spent some time there. He's out now and lives in Pennsylvania.
What do you think about the medical world today and doctors? I'm sure, judging by your personality here, you had a pretty good, as we say, bedside manner.
Hopefully.
You were easy to visit with and be around, so that helped you a lot.
It does help, right? I think you got to be considerate and be willing to talk. The problem is now, I think these organizations want you to see as many patients a day as you can, and you don't have the time to sit down and talk to them. We have a nephew named Phil Perryman that works for the University of Oklahoma, takes care of all the intensive care patients at St. John's that are related to the University of Oklahoma. He was here maybe last month and told Carol and my wife that the problem with doctors now is they didn't have any time to spend with patients. I think that's probably going to get worse. I think we're going to have a problem having a sufficient quantity of doctors.
Something's going to have to give in the hospitals, say, over the next 25, 50 years. One hospital person told me they thought they'd become kind of like utilities, and that clinics would be bigger and bigger, and that the hospitals would be kind of run like PSO or something, and they'd be just a utility. I don't know if you have an opinion about that or not.
No, I think he's right about the clinics. I think that's the best way to practice medicine, because you have available specialties to call on, and it doesn't take a month to see somebody. Cleveland Clinic, recently they've really gotten a lot of accolades. Cleveland's been number one in cardiovascular surgery, and they're 2, 3, 4, 5 in all the specialties there. Cleveland Clinic, of course, I guess Mayo's number one. They've got a subsidiary in Phoenix. Cleveland Clinic had one in Fort Lauderdale. Of course, St. John's, they own the anesthesiologists. They work for St. John's. I said, why do you do that? Well, their malpractice insurance was up to $60,000 a year. The anesthesiologists, once they joined St. John's, it was $6,000. St. John's is self-insured. And the cardiovascular surgeons at St. John's now work for the hospital. Of course, the hospital's losing some business. The orthopedists build their own little surgical unit. They got that surgery hospital out on 71st across the river, and spine hospital. And they have all these outpatient surgery units. Takes business away from the hospital.
Does that surprise you that whereas some of the surgery that back in your day, they'd have to at least spend the night or the next night, and now they come in the morning and they go back home?
Absolutely. We used to do hernias and they'd spend 5 days in the hospital. Now they go home that day.
As you look back on that, do you think that we didn't need to keep them in the hospital?
Yeah, I think we didn't need to. But boy, the patients wanted to be in. They'd heard about it and they just wanted to be in. I think it's still a great profession to get into. I think a young man can go into it and always make a living. He may not get wealthy. He probably doesn't really want to, but he ought to be able to make a respectable living.
Plus improve the lives of a lot of people.
Yeah, sure.
That's to give you great satisfaction to perform the surgery and that person's life was going to be extended.
I agree.
Were there many female surgeons?
Not at that time. There are now. My wife's sister in Tucson had cancer of the breast, and I didn't agree with what they planned to do, and so I called. Now, St. Francis had one named Mitchell. She's not practicing now. I don't know why. And St. John's has one named Flynn, female breast surgeons. I talked to both of them, and I got them to kind of agree with what I thought was all right. But anyway, it worked out all right for her sister. She just had to have two procedures. I thought one could have handled the whole thing. And that means another exposure to anesthesia and another exposure to possible infection, and it isn't fundamentally necessary, I don't think.
So wasn't it nice to have these young ones listen to the guru?
They're probably better trained in breast surgery than I was. Of course, George Crowell was an advocate of lumpectomy and radiation. This was back in 60. And, of course, they're doing a lot of that here now.
Mm-hmm. So a young man or woman is listening to this. What kind of advice would you give them if they're interested in the medical profession or in the surgery business? What would you tell them?
I'd say go for it if they're really dedicated to it. You can't go into it for the money, but there is a lot of reward. You get satisfaction, and you ought to be able to make a comfortable living.
It's hard to believe you say don't go in it for the money. You would think a surgeon, for what they do, the delicate things that they do, would be highly paid. And you're saying they're not of the highest.
Well, I think the cardiovascular surgeons are now. That was a new field when I came. But, you know, gallbladders, that was about a $700 procedure. I remember operating on old man Siegfried. He had a cancer of the colon, and he went to an internist named Tom Fair, who was at the Springer Clinic. Tom called me and said, could you take this patient? He said he won't go to St. Francis, and he needs surgery. So it was old man Siegfried. We operated on him, and I charged him what I thought was a good fee. I think it was about $1,800. They came in the office and said, I'm nowhere near. Gave me more money. Unusual.
Gave you more than $1,800?
Yeah, oh yeah. And then I know another guy took his stomach out. He asked me the same thing, and I said, we charge usually about $1,200, $1,500. Not near enough. I never got a penny.
Didn't get anything.
Things happen.
I guess in the cemetery, you believe in the cemetery, it's mostly descendants are those of George B. Behrman.
Right. I don't know, there was some friction between that family and our family. I know there was a son of George B. that lived on the other side of my dad's brother, who was the furthest west in our group. There was a little house that sat back off of, about 100 yards. But we never were friends with him. I was half afraid of him. I don't know why.
And they were your relatives?
Yeah, they were cousins. But then I did know some. There was one guy that became the director out at the zoo. And he was a real nice guy.
What was his name?
Panosky Perryman, but he went by something else.
And here is a picture of the man.
Benjamin, yeah.
Benjamin, who brought the whole Perryman family to what would become Tulsa.
That's true.
And his painting is by George Catlin.
That's my understanding, yeah.
Hangs in the Smithsonian Museum in Washington, D.C. George Catlin was a painter, author, and traveler, and he specialized in portraits of Native America and the Old West.
I think they have a copy of that.
At Gilcrease?
Mm-hmm. Probably down in the storage. But we've seen it out there.
Interesting, when I sit and look at you, I see the Native American face.
Oh, really?
When you first see you, it doesn't strike you, but when I sit and look at you, you realize, and maybe it's because I know you are. Nobody's ever probably said that to you.
That's true.
They haven't.
Nobody, I think.
Yeah, it's probably because I interviewed Charles Banks Wilson, and he specialized in drawing and painting Native Americans.
Well, my father really looked Indian. And a matter of fact, when we got married in Toledo, I think he caused quite a sensation there. He looked like almost full blood.
Thank you very much for doing this.
You bet.